The first time I ever truly humanized a ghost was when Amy and I were investigating a courthouse in Georgia for ghost hunters. People who worked there had many experiences over the years. Their major concern was that an officer had been killed on the courthouse steps, and they thought he might be the one causing the rampant activity. They wanted to know if this person, after his traumatic death, was at peace. The case started out like any other. We arrived, toured the location with the client, and set up all the gear. Then it was time for lights out. I don't know if Amy and I were in the right place at the right time, or if the spirits had other plans for us, but this investigation was different. We spent a lot of the time trying to connect to the police officer without much success. Eventually, we found ourselves in a room with several typewriters on display. Though we weren't reaching the officer, we didn't want to give up making contact with someone. For whatever reason, we started asking yes or no questions in that particular room, and we were getting results that were surprising. Someone was answering our questions very clearly. Amy and I shifted our focus to objects in the room, asking this man if the typewriters had belonged to him. Slowly but surely, we determined he had owned one of them. We looked a bit closer at the display. There was a little card that mentioned a particular person who was associated with at least one of these typewriters. There was even a photograph of him. We did a little internet research and found out that this man was actually the architect of the courthouse. Our world opened up immediately, powered by the research we were able to do on the spot from our phones. There wasn't time to show it on the episode, but we started asking him many questions about his life, whether he was an architect, and how many children he had. To our shock, the man answered correctly. At this point, Amy had pulled up a biography on the architect of the building, and we used this research to inform our questions. We discovered that this architect was so renowned that there was an entire archive in Atlanta that housed all of his materials and sketches. If we had our choice, we would have gone to Atlanta, pulled more research, and returned with further documentation to discover more about this person and, at the simplest level, try to find out why he was lingering. We had to be content, for the moment, with what we had accomplished. The format of the show didn't allow us to get real closure, but I have a few ideas about why we might have stayed behind. He was a famous architect, and this building was one of his greatest accomplishments, so he could have been there to watch over his work. Another theory is that his energy could be attached to the objects he had used to create his masterpiece. When we started interacting with him, bringing up his tools and facts about his life, he was validated and recognized. Amy and I had made a deeper human connection with someone who had passed. We were trying to understand who this non-living entity was as a person, not just as a conduit of paranormal activity. This gave me a different perspective on what I was doing and why I was investigating, and it was much more fulfilling. We started to humanize who we were speaking with. Those paranormal knocks and bangs are spooky, yes, but the action behind it is familiar. I hadn't made the full connection before that it was even created by a person, not just a ghost. Hello, my ghosties, my ghoulies, and my moth people. Welcome to Noctivagant, the show about the strange, paranormal, otherworldly, and the people who write books about it. My name is Rory, and I am joined by the spooky yet communicative quartet, Jay, Nick, Nicole, and Noel.
There are extra names there this time.
What? Yes, we are joined by the hosts of the quite unusual podcast, Nicole and Noel.
Hi. Oh,
hello.
Hello.
Hello. Well, on this show, we are going to discuss, dissect, and review the best and worst in the world of paranormal and conspiracy literature. So settle in, buckle up, and prepare for a walk on the midnight roads of Noctivagant.
Yeah.
back. The music is like fading out or something. But anyway, welcome. How are you guys doing today? Welcome to the show.
Good. How are you?
Oh, glad you know, to be
here. It's been a while since we've had company.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
I think, was the last one Chris Jimenez?
It might have been. Was it really that long ago?
It feels like it might have been. I mean, whether we had him for the Satanic Panic episode.
Mm-hmm. We had Chris DeMars on for Amy Bruni.
So that might have been more recent.
Yeah.
We also had we had the host of Morbid Forest. Yep. The name is slipping me because I have the mad
Naomi.
Cow.
Naomi
of the Morbid Forest. That's right. Yeah. Yep. No, it was, we had her. Yeah, it's been a long time.
Telepathy, too.
Twin Telepathy.
Who did we have on Twin Telepathy?
We had a guest on Twin Telepathy.
We did?
Yes.
Oh, well, we are well, really yeah, insulting then, someone right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and then we had, you know, we had Jack on and for Woody's
book. Yeah, no, it's been a long time. So, yeah, welcome. I promise, everyone else survived.
Yeah, I mean, at least we think. You know, I haven't heard from Caleb in a while.
And to be completely fair, Jack's Twitter feed is largely automated, so he could have been dead for months.
Yeah, I mean, he still retweets us often enough. Often enough.
Yeah, it's either that or the algorithms like us.
Yeah, fair. Well, anyway, like I said, welcome to the show, you guys. So tell us a little bit about the Quite Unusual podcast, since you guys are also podcast hosts.
We are. Our podcast is a paranormal, true crime, weird history, just, I guess, all around weird topics, anything that's quite unusual.
That's right.
A little descriptive there.
It's research-based with some comedy thrown in.
Hey.
And, yeah, check us out. Quite Unusual Podcast.
I would agree. Definitely check it out. And,
yep.
And honestly, if you like our show, you'll like your guys' show as well, because I feel like we are in a very similar vein. You know, we just focus on one book. You guys focus on topics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
you know.
Exactly.
Research We're based with a little bit of comedy thrown in, aka our personalities.
Yeah.
Exactly. I was going to say, we have so much in common. We love spooky stuff. We're all gorgeous, let's be honest. We're all hilarious. All of us. It's so crazy. We're all 6 foot two. It's unbelievable to find this many people at the exact same height.
Who stole 2 inches from me? I'll kill you all.
We redistributed the inches.
Yeah,
it was the only way to make it fair, Nick.
Yeah, okay. So we're gonna do it with height, but not the wealth gap. Got it.
Yeah,
I don't make the rules.
Somehow it's easier with height.
Yeah, right. It's only easier for you guys because I'm the one losing bones. You're just adding them.
Hey, I'm not sure how we managed to distribute ourselves all to 6 foot two with you the only one shrinking, but I'm not going to go into the physics of it.
You just took my legs, and now my torso just hovers around that height.
I like it. Yeah. Now there's some magic involved. I'm into it.
Okay. Yeah.
It's none of our business how it happened. None of our business.
No. Fair.
And, well, it's not the superpower I dreamed of. I could be the great hover torso.
But you can only hover to be 6 foot two.
You can't
go higher than that.
Yeah,
or lower.
I am immune to knee shots.
Okay, I'm looking at the episode description for Goat Meddling, where we covered Twin Telepathy, and if we do have a guest on there, they aren't mentioned, so I'm wondering if I Mandela affected myself again.
I think your imaginary friend was a guest on that episode.
We did have somebody, we had Modern Horizons on at one point, but that was for a different book.
Are we sure?
I think so.
I believe you guys.
I don't know now. I mean, it's like Nick said, it's been a long time. So
it's been a long time, and we smoke a lot of pot.
That's correct.
That is
correct. Yeah. And I heard that it kills brain cells. I'm not convinced fully of that, but that's what the boomers say.
That's what the FBI says.
Also, cells are constantly dying and renewing. If saying it's like it kills brain cells is like saying exfoliating kills skin cells. It's like, yeah, dude, they're cells.
And to be completely fair, that's actually kind of funny you brought that up, because I this morning was having a weird existential line of thoughts, kind of ship a Theseus type stuff, where I was cleaning some dust off my office, and you know, I thought about the fact that, you know, that's mostly skin cells, and then I just thought, you know. Over the course of the year, I probably clean a whole me out of the house. And what if somewhere in the dump, all that me is just collecting into some sort of horrible Nick amalgam?
Really, you're just a snake. You're a snake.
Creating a new you.
Oh my God. What if we shed our skin like that? That would be both disgusting and incredible.
Yeah, it would feel, here's the thing, it would be gross, but can you imagine how satisfying it would feel?
I know.
Especially when you got that one good piece where you got like half your torso in one sheet. It feels good.
You guys are something else. I'm telling you.
Just because we want to tear our skin off in a really satisfying way sometimes.
I mean, I guess I get it.
It's like when you have like an ingrown hair that's been irritating you for days and you finally pop it.
Oh, no, I don't.
Like, oh, it's
I mean, so good. I get it, but I don't like, I don't know. I don't long for it like this.
Do you ever do the thing where like you put glue on your palms as a child?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Or you pour the Elmer's glue out and then you take a magic marker you hate and you just smash it into the glue till the glue kind of has that color. And then you can cover your fingertips in it and make colored fingerprints.
I've never done that.
Yeah, like you peel them off, then you have your fingerprint.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Whoa. Right. You're weird. Well, that's another level. I'll be doing that later.
I also, with glue and markers alone, ruined a lot of school desks.
I can imagine that you did.
I believe it.
Ah, okay, so we have already spun off, so that's a great sign.
That's to be expected.
So, Rory, what are we here to talk about today?
You know, I'm really glad that you asked that question, because I was going to have to ask myself, but not today. We are talking about Goodbye, Hello, Processing Grief and Understanding Death Through the Paranormal by Adam Berry, host of Kindred Spirits, and I showed the book to the camera, even though nobody is watching. So, book by Adam Berry here, the co-host of Kindred Spirits. We covered Amy Bruni's book a long time ago with our friend of the show, Chris DeMars.
Yep. And now we've completed the collection.
Yes. Now that Adam Berry has written a book, we're now covering it.
Yeah.
So, and it's good. I enjoyed it. What do you guys think?
I thought it was great.
It's great.
It was it was an easy read. It wasn't too long. It was very easy also to like get through. Like the, I don't know, the wording, it was kind of written like conversational.
It was very approachable.
Yes.
Which I kind of had the same thought about Amy Bruni's book. I mean, personally, I will say I think Adam Berry's book did a better job of it.
I agree.
But that's just because he got more into theory and kind of like, you know, think kind of theorizing about the nature of the afterlife, things like that. I felt like Amy Bruni's book had a little of that, but it focused a little too much on the mechanics of doing a television show.
Yeah.
And so that kind of bored me. But I really enjoyed this. I would put this in the category with some other books we've done, like Fringeology and even Amy Bruni's book. Kind of those books that I would hand to someone who is not marinated in paranormal stuff 24/7 and wants to start to kind of like look into this stuff and learn about it. I would put that into that pile that I'd hand to people.
Yeah.
Like I'm not going to hand someone Rudolf Steiner.
Yeah. I think that this, I do, especially if they're a fan of ghost hunting shows, I think that this book would be a really good introduction to the weirder side of the paranormal, because because Adam's friends with John Tenney and Greg Newkirk and all of these people who are
weirdos,
you know, they're weirdos and they're, you know, they openly do weird shit at all of their events and whatever. You're gonna get like the description of the ritual that they do, and you know, all the other weird theories that have come up, because you can tell, if you've ever been to a John Tenney lecture, that there's some pretty heavy John Tenney influence on some of Adam Berry's theories throughout here.
I continue to hold. John Tenney is like the equivalent of the Don in the paranormal mob family.
Yes. Yes. Oh, 100%.
He's like the grandfather of paranormal.
Exactly.
Not that I'm saying he's a grandfather. He's like a cool uncle more so. But
oh, for sure.
He is the paranormal's vodka aunt.
I mean, on Hellier, they called him Old Man Tenney.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, that's the thing is that, I mean, also we have
and
to
he's not even that old for the record.
He is the Don of a very particular paranormal family that we just happen to like a lot of the people that he's influenced.
Yeah, the weirdo side.
Whereas, you know, there are other paranormal families in the paranormal crime wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll, I mean, but even Tenney, you can see Tenney's influence when we read Brian Kano's book.
Yeah. And I would put him and Mike Ricksecker in their own kind of division.
I mean, that's, it's good that, I mean, that's funny that you put them there because those two are homies. So
yeah, I have a memory. So are we ready to get going?
Jay, what do you think of the book?
Oh, right. Jay, you have opinions and stuff.
Yes. Several of them. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was a very kind of sweet and touching book, honestly, which is kind of rare in the types of books we typically study to get one that's honestly more, that in some ways is more about the emotional side of what we do than the practical and scientific side. And I think that that's good to return to periodically because in our quest for respectability in this field, I think we sometimes forget that at the end of the day, spiritual experiences are inherently emotional ones and can't always be measured mathematically or concretely. And so I think this was kind of a good sort of return to the heart of the matter type of book.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good way to look at it.
Did anyone else cry through
a lot of
it? Yeah,
I was just going to say I cried just, like several times while reading.
Yeah.
The only one that really got me was the chapter about his dog. That was entirely because of Buffy recently. You guys losing Buffy recently. Oh, yeah. That got to me.
Yeah, that was kind of the most intense part of the experience for me was just the fact that I am currently, you know, we are currently going through what for me personally is the most profound grief I've ever experienced thus far in my life. And that's, I think, another reason why I found this to just largely be an emotional experience of a book of it is about it is about grief. And that's
I agree. And I would I too would say that, like, for me, the pet especially, because it's so raw, and at the time of reading the book, it was within days of, you know, everything happening was when I started reading the book. So it's like, okay, this is hitting home really hard at certain parts of it. But honestly, I also think it was good weirdly good timing, because I got the perspective of somebody who is a third party to this, even though I know, like, Jay has been through this and I know that Nick has been through this and that they're both, you know, here for me and everything. But, like, having somebody else say the feelings that I was feeling at the same time and then, you know, talk about how they were, how, you know, able to overcome and everything else, it weirdly came at a good time too, to help me rationalize everything in my head.
Absolutely. Right. Well, and I think I was in a similar boat, not just due to Buffy. I mean, I lost an uncle right there, right when I was reading the book. And I definitely noted kind of one of those points where the world seems to be rhyming.
Yeah.
You kind of notice it. Yeah. So, great. I don't want to go as far as saying I attracted all that death by reading the book. No, I don't think that's the case, but.
No. I wouldn't say it like that. If anything, the universe was preparing you for the death that was inevitable, that was coming, you know?
Yep.
And speaking of synchronicities and inevitability, it is, what would you said, yesterday was Adam Berry's birthday?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're recording a book about, that he wrote, so that's fun.
Happy birthday, Adam.
Happy birthday.
The hookers will be there shortly.
No,
for the last fucking time.
Okay, I need to go make some cancellations.
Yeah, you
then.
Cannot send sex workers to the house of people we do not know that well. Like, they never appreciate it.
Is that why Whitley Strieber won't return my calls anymore?
Whitley Strieber won't return our calls anymore because two of us are trans.
Right. Forgot about that.
The fact that, you know, like, I had a very scolding retweet is probably why he unfollowed the show.
Probably.
Sorry, you're not missing much.
No.
Better off.
Yeah. All right. So are we ready to dive in?
Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm ready. I got my swimming gear on under my clothes. It's very uncomfortable.
I told you to stop wearing Speedos.
Never.
All right. Part one. Who is Adam Berry?
We just went over this.
God damn it.
Wait, who are we talking about today? Wait, who?
I am looking forward to recording till midnight.
It's a good thing I didn't have plans after this. If you've been around the paranormal TV scene for a while, then you probably already know the author of this month's book. Adam Berry, best known for being one of the investigators on Kindred Spirits, did not come to the paranormal lightly. He, like most of us interested in the anomalous, had an experience, or rather, several. In 2006, Adam was in Gettysburg on a ghost tour. He broke off the tour to take a look at a known paranormal hotspot, you know, like you do. There, he saw an arrangement of misty, ethereal figures gliding through the woods. As he watched the figures, he heard the boom of cannons, the repeated popping of musket fire, and the screams of the dead and dying. This interaction with the strange is the thing that started his journey into the paranormal. And his journey has, like many others, been focused on documenting the existence of ghosts, what they are and why they exist. What he seeks to do with this book is to talk not only about what he has uncovered in those areas, but how this research and these experiences have impacted him, others, and the dead. Because as we discussed in Amy Bruni's book and others, ghosts are people too. As people, we are all curious in some way about death. Some are also fearful. And when someone who was given weeks to live asked Adam how she could reliably communicate with her loved ones after she died, Adam was floored. He found that it was impossible to give her a functional answer. Like anything in the paranormal world, all we have is theories. We don't actually know how it works. While he believes that everyone has a spiritual energy that survives death, not everyone will become a ghost. But one thing he is sure of is that there is an afterlife. If you like Kindred Spirits, then you likely know the Gettysburg story. Part of it used to be the intro for the show for years, after all. What you may not know is that this was not his first paranormal experience. When he was 8 years old, living in Florence, Alabama, he heard what sounded like dog scratches on the bathroom door, but they didn't have a dog. When he heard what sounded like little nails on the hardwood and a jingle of tags approaching the foot of his bed, he yelled, "Stop!" on instinct. And it did. And like so many other anomalous experiencers, Adam went straight back to sleep. From that day, he started to notice more and more strange phenomena around his house, from something in the corner of his eye to footsteps on the basement stairs. And as a fun side note, he later learned that his parents had been warned that the house was haunted by Santa Claus, or at least the man who played him every Christmas and whom had been the previous owner of the house.
God, can you imagine waking up to Santa Claus standing over your bed?
Ethereal, like, ghosty Santa Claus.
Like, in my mind, of course, because it's just what my mind does. In my mind, he's just floating there, like, his neck is open, and so that just all the light is stained red, just looking down at you,
Oh, God.
Ho.
It's like a horror Santa Claus. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bleeding.
A dream both horrifying as it is erotic.
No.
I just, you don't pay me to be here. Like, I'm here for free, and you say these things.
You let me into your house to do this to you.
You actually have a code to get in.
I was going
to
say, you let yourself in.
That's true. That's true. You can't keep me out, just like Santa.
They're changing the code after this.
I'll come down the chimney.
Bleeding from the neck.
That part wasn't planned. I got caught on something on the way down. Please call an ambulance.
His dad, in true dad fashion, said that if he had any experiences, that he didn't pay them any attention. His mom, however, remembered some incidents of her own. Things would go missing from the bathroom, like makeup and other female things. His dad remembered that the previous owner called the ghost Gertrude. So I don't know, maybe Jerry was stealing the makeup. Even ghosts want to dress up, I guess. Adam had very little experience with death until Gettysburg. His grandfather died when he was 4, and while he was very young, he has strong memories of the funeral, maybe in part because his parents let him see the body. Growing up in a Christian household, to Adam, this was helpful. He knew that he would see him again. While he may not have had much personal experience with death, he was fascinated with fiction in this world. Mostly about ghosts and hauntings, to no one's surprise. What may be a surprise, though, is that it wasn't until he was moving to Cape Cod with his future husband, Ben, that he actually thought about going out and finding ghosts. In a small fishing village called Provincetown, where Adam believes the land itself is magical in nature, and the town's history is filled with shipwrecks, murder, and mischief, is where he attempted to make contact with the dead for the first time. After the loss of a friend, his first real experience with death as an adult, and during the off-season of the theater, he and Ben took the handful of equipment that they had and went to investigate. Most often, they just used a tape recorder, asking question after question into the dark and waiting for answers. The many investigations that he did here were the best part of the off-season in Cape Cod for him. Then, one year, they were watching Ghost Hunters when an ad came on looking for applicants for Ghost Hunter Academy. He applied, but wasn't selected for the first season. However, they called him back months later to get him in for a second season. The very first investigation they went on, they went to Waverly Hills Sanatorium, which, if you're familiar with his show or his work, you'll recognize. The show was hard. He quickly learned that no matter how hard he tried to do everything correctly, the producers ultimately decided who would be eliminated each week, and if they didn't want him to win, he wouldn't. So instead of trying to win, he decided to soak up the experience. That mentality worked, because he went on to win, and the 6 episodes of Ghost Hunters turned into 4 years on the road with the show. And it was here that he befriended Amy Bruni, his now bestie and co-host. Turns out, when they worked together, they got results. Maybe it's their energy, but something about when they work together seems to bring out these ghosties. They had a connection immediately and were able to share their theories comfortably. And because of all this, they are still working together to humanize and bring light not just to the struggles of the living, but to those of the dead as well. And with that, we're going to move into our first discussion question. So, we just went over a glimpse of how Adam got into this world of the paranormal. And so, as a fun question to get to know our guests and everybody here, how did you get into this world? We're all involved in our own ways now, you know, podcasting, researching, investigating, whatever it might be. But what drew you in and what keeps you interested in it all?
It's a good question.
Yeah, you guys want to take it first?
Yeah.
Sure. How did I get into this paranormal world? I think kind of similar to Adam. I had a couple of experiences when I was younger. Like, I think I was just more open to spirits. And, I mean, children are just more open to things. But, like, I used to hear voices in my basement. I used to see, like, if I had an animal that had passed, I used to see the animal in my house. So I feel like I was just like more open in that sense to the paranormal world. And then, I don't know, just consuming like unsolved mysteries.
Hell yeah.
Horror movies. I'm a huge horror movie fan too. So I think like that just also kind of kept me in it too. And yeah, I mean, just kind of an overall weirdo, as I guess we like to call ourselves.
Yeah. We are the weirdos.
Us yeah. too there.
Yeah.
For sure. I grew up in a haunted house, and actually every house I've ever lived in has been very haunted, including this one we're sitting in right now.
Yeah,
for sure. So I think along with like what Nicole said, I just from a young age saw, I mean, Sixth Sense style, I just saw dead people. And I don't know, just kind of was fascinated in it. Like, how were you alive at one moment and now you're gone, but I can still see you sometimes and you look different. And just like little kid logic where I just wanted to know more and more, but I was also very scared of it. And now I think, I don't know, I just stay in it because it's so part of the human experience.
Yeah.
We're here for such a short amount of time. And then where do we go? It's fascinating.
I'm curious. I mean, have you continued to, when you say see them, was it full visual? Was it kind of in your head?
So I don't think I've ever really like it's been in my head. I remember when I was very, very young, I was sleeping and I was startled awake and there was just like a man in my room. And I was like, oh, I don't know you. And it scared the shit out of me because I was a child and there's a man in my room.
Right.
And I did the little kid thing where I put the blanket over my head, because if I can't see him, obviously he can't see me. And then I told my mom about it, and she asked me to describe him. She's like, oh, that's your grandfather. He used to live here. And yeah, there was another point where I was very young, and I was in the living room, and the television was off. But I remember I looked at the TV, and you know, like, you can see your reflection in it. And there was a man again, like, standing behind me. And I looked, and he wasn't there. It's like, oh, okay. So there's just like this dude. And even now, sometimes, well, Nicole is seen in this house, right? You saw the full body in my room.
No, I haven't seen anything in this house, but I have heard like noises. Mm-hmm. I've heard voices. I haven't seen any apparitions. But it's funny though that you bring up the man, because we've had like psychics on our show, like, mm-hmm. come on and just like interview them. And one psychic actually mentioned, they said that you had like a man standing mm-hmm. behind you. Yeah. And then I think you asked, you were like, is he wearing a hat or like something?
Yeah, it's like him. It's like,
and it was like that the psychic like picked up on this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's kind of like a guardian angel type of thing, you know? I think that he's sort of like kind of like a guardian or like a spirit guide for Noelle, because I mean, she sees him all the time. And if it's her grandpa, you know.
Yeah, he also leaves me dimes constantly. Constantly. That's a thing. Constantly. I was in Utah years ago, and I at a house I've never been to before, and I opened a book on a bookshelf and a dime fell out of it. And I was like, oh, okay. Cool. Like, that was for me. So
always, yeah, dimes?
Yeah, always dimes.
Hmm.
Always. It got to the point where I was like, do I have schizophrenia? Like, I'm seeing people that aren't here. And I don't. So happy to say that I don't have it. But yeah, it got to that point where I'm like, I either can see ghosts, or I have schizophrenia. So it's one or the other. Yeah.
I totally get that. I had a near-death experience in 2008. And a number of years afterwards, it's faded off since. For a number of years after that, I had very similar. I saw things a lot. And it was, it's almost like the film has grown back over in the years since. I don't quite see things as often anymore, but... For a long time there in college, I was just like, okay, there are some options here. Either A, that car wreck has broken something fundamentally in my brain.
Yeah. Besides just your spine.
Yeah, I meant brain damage. Or I have schizophrenia, or I need to start paying some closer attention to that spooky stuff I've been reading my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, once you get a taste too, it's like you can't. Once you're in it and you've seen something, there's like, you're in it.
Well, and once you accept really that this, you don't think it's insanity. That is a paradigm shifting day.
Yes, absolutely. That's what I love the most about this community also, is that you don't have to start sentences with, this is going to sound crazy, but you can just immediately go into, so there's this full body apparition in my room. They're like, oh yeah, Ben there.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are many stories I've shared on this show that, well, this is a very public sphere because I don't got to see anyone's faces, but these two, it's fine. When other people ask if I've had paranormal experiences, those stories are never going to come up with them, you know, because there are at least, you know, like just talking to people at parties, there's sort of the most palatable paranormal experiences I've had. And that's where most it sticks for most of the time. And then we get into weirder stuff like the UFO and the birds, That one I've told too many times because I've kind of gotten a script for it, because that helped me deal with the trauma of the fear that I felt in there. But it's definitely, you know, I very much agree though. I think that is probably the best thing about our community, is that you can have someone come up and just, you know, with their full chest, look you in the eye and say, I have fairies in my garden. And you know what? Your response is cool. Like, I want to go. Let's go see them.
Yeah.
I love it. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to. I've always been drawn to this world, despite the fact that my parents were and are very distinctly not into it. But I think the thing that really like fully pulled me into it was making friends with these guys, because that kind of gave me a space to be able to more fully and more comfortably talk about some of the weird shit that had just been happening to me my entire life. Like, you know, the shape-shifting shadow thing that's been following me around at least since I was 11 years old and quite possibly longer, that trial and error has indicated, like, it's not hostile. It's definitely not friendly towards anyone that's not me. But if it was going to hurt somebody, she definitely would have done it by now.
I will never forget the day that I just casually mentioned to you offhand having seen her. Because you looked like your entire world suddenly was crumbling because you had outside verification of it.
Yeah, I thought I was a lunatic. I didn't think, I don't know what I thought. I was like, I had just told myself for so long that this wasn't real, that it wasn't like I'd stopped seeing her. It was just I'd gotten to a point where when I did see her, my brain would just sort of automatically delete it from my perception of, like, that's not, that we can't pay attention to that. Like, this definitely humanoid looking thing that is just around you all the time that nobody else can see, just pretend it's not important. And then Nick was like, and then I think I mentioned it during campfire stories or something, and you went, oh, so that's with you, and pointed to a thing standing over my left shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah, I was standing at the edge of the yard by the bushes, figure in a hood.
Yep.
Wow. Is it a threatening presence, or is it, do you feel like it's like...
Not if, like, you're Jay.
Yeah.
her name is, I call her Swan. We had a conversation several years ago about if she wanted a name, and she indicated that that's the one she liked. She is not a threatening presence. She has been aggressive with a couple of psychics in the past who have acknowledged her when she did not want to be acknowledged. But with me, she's very distinctly helpful. She can find lost objects for me if they're small, or if they're not if I lose something down a storm drain, she can't get it back for me. But if I've left things at school or in hotel rooms a couple of times, and then it's just turned up in my purse a few days later, something like very distinctly, this should not be here because I checked yesterday. Yeah, so she's brought things back for me, and there's also been a couple of times where actual threatening presences have tried to... I haven't told this story on the podcast before, but when we were still living with Nick, one time I was alone in the house, and I looked over, and hovering by the front door was this shadow person looking thing that was very distinctly a malevolent presence. I could feel that immediately. It was staring at me. I could see its eyes, and I could see its teeth, which is... Yeah, it was staring at me slack-jawed and exposing all of its teeth, and I was staring at it, and I just kind of reflexively went, Swan? And then I saw her run past me, and she pulled it into the kitchen. I saw her do this, and then a couple of minutes later, she came out, and it didn't.
Swan run into the kitchen like, this is my moment!
This is where we take food!
That's awesome. That's incredible.
Yeah. So
no, I honestly, Swan is an interesting one because we still are not sure what she is. But we have had a couple people independently see her, or at least feel her around.
I have a theory. I have a couple of theories. A growing theory that I have is that Swan is excess psychic energy that,
like a poltergeist.
Exactly. That Jay has, almost like excised off themselves and into something like else, that. Like almost like an accidental egregore. And I think a lot of that is based off of the timing is where a lot of that theory comes from. You saw it when you were 11.
Yeah.
That was a pretty big shifting point for your life.
It was also like right after I started my period.
That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, that's where a lot of, a lot of like poltergeists or like paranormal activity like surrounds young girls when they are going through that.
I wonder if instead of it manifesting as poltergeist energy and like having a haunting experience, because you have been and always likely will be a very like insular. You're very to yourself.
You're bigger on the inside.
Yeah. that instead it manifested as you essentially created almost like a homunculi kind of thing.
And that's kind of where I lean towards the only other explanation that I could come up with. And I think this one is distinctly less likely is my mom and my grandma have both mentioned just casually, offhandedly, and then not gone into details that apparently my grandfather was a warlock, and they don't know exactly what it was he did a lot of the times, but he apparently did some magical stuff occasionally that they didn't really know the details of. So there's a small possibility that she's something my grandfather conjured, did not properly dismiss, and then she was just kind of hanging around my family.
I have a much more speculative theory that has no evidence, but I like it.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's just based off of things that we've spun about on the show before, because we've talked about reincarnation, if that's a possibility. We've talked about the whole idea of souls kind of schooling together, where you're going to meet the same people or the same souls in new forms in each life. And then I thought, and Corey, I mean, I've heard you many times, or sorry, Jay, I've heard you go on many tirades about how you despise being in this body and in this world, and that you want to be a cheetah. And so what I'm thinking is, what if what Swan is a part of our social circle who didn't want to do this like you? And you were just like, listen, I'll go down there and be a human, but you got to stay here and watch my back.
I like that. That's fun.
The more ungrounded the theory, the more I like it, the more rabidly I'll defend it.
I mean, why? It can all be possible. That's like kind of the world that we live in, where it's like, the paranormal world, like, why can't everything, like, nobody knows. There are no real answers.
Correct.
So. Exactly.
Possibilities are endless.
Entertain everything, believe nothing.
Exactly.
I think we still have to answer the question.
Yep. I guess my way into this was probably religion. I grew up in a... At first, we were Catholic, then we were Pentecostal, so we went from one end to the other. And I was, I would say, relatively too heavily involved in my church for a off and on period of time. I was either doing drugs or I was in church.
Yeah, right? That's accurate.
Drugs or Jesus.
doing drugs or Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, at times, definitely. But I would say that was probably my introduction, because as much as Christians may not want to acknowledge aspects of this, but there is a lot of paranormal involved in their faith. I started practicing other magics and investigating very loosely and poorly.
Badly. Yeah. Investigating badly. That's what we did.
Yep. And then just that was it. And then Nick came up with the idea for the show after I pestered him enough to do a podcast with me. And then he pitched this, and that's where it all began for me.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
But so before I answer, I do have to say the whole doing drugs for Jesus thing. I just had the image locked in my brain of just some guy like on a couch in a crack den, tying the surgical tubing around his arm to inject heroin, and there's Jesus floating next to him. Yeah, fucking do it. Oh, come on. I don't have veins, otherwise I'd be doing heroin too.
I mean, he drank so much wine.
Yeah.
It's true. He was a wino.
I think for me, it kind of feels like I didn't have too much of a choice in the matter. In that I was infatuated with horror movies and horror stories at a young age.
I guess there's that too.
Yeah, and obviously if you read a bunch of stories about ghosts, you're going to start wanting to figure out if there's real ghosts, and that leads you to checking out all of the little books at the library, what little they have on the topic. And I don't know, like when I was 8 or 9, I saw a UFO. That was pretty formative, because that and. And then I've had a smattering of other experiences. So it's kind of always just been an undercurrent in my life. It's always been around.
Mm-hmm.
It's ebbs and flows. There's times where it's almost like it doesn't go away, but I just stop looking for it and I stop paying attention to it, so it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I mean, it really does feel like it's something that I came into this world with those hooks in me. And when you're really looking at the world, in my opinion, I mean, yeah, there's plenty of mysteries of science and mathematics and engineering that we haven't figured out yet. But it always boggled my mind that we have in our midst that what seems to be, to me, pretty compelling and at least anecdotal evidence that would hint at some deeper truth about the nature of the of humanity, of existing, of the universe, and we never bother to look at it. That always bugged me as a kid. Like, we spend billions of dollars building large hadron colliders to get, you know, to basically look deeper into the quantum mechanics of the universe. But we never at the same time think, are there other ways of getting that information? Could we, you know, we have these other speculative phenomenon that we have just as much evidence of as some of the particles they've spent billions hunting. And we've never bothered to look for it. And that's always bugged me a bit. It always seemed like there was some sort of intentional silencing happening in that direction, even when I was a young kid. And that, I don't know, that stuck with me, which is why. And also, I mean, which, of course, led to me reading a lot of this stuff and ingesting a lot of it to stick it to the man in order, you know, I was a kid to feel transgressive.
Yeah.
To feel like I'm eating the forbidden fruit.
Very punk rock of
that. I mean, which also led to me why I got all the friends I did. Because I was a very, I came from a very polite, very well, you know, not well-to-do, but firmly middle-class family, very clean, and I made friends with hooligans and criminals exclusively.
It's true. That's true. I literally decided, we were in, Nick and I went to high school together, and I remember, I, to this day, very vividly, can picture the moment that I first saw Nick and everything, because we were playing one of those stupid icebreaker games that you have to that you do at the on the first day of class. And the game was that the person in the center had to go and say something about, like, that they would have in common with other people. And I think it took Nick like 12 tries to finally get somebody to stand up for something. And I was fucking dying. Like, I thought it was the funniest fucking thing in the world, because as far as I could tell, he wasn't, like, he was dead serious about all of these things. Like, I have a wall with medieval weaponry on it. And I was like, who the fuck's going to have that?
But to be fair, my bedroom was horror books, medieval weaponry, and hamsters.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not saying a little hamsters. I had 74 hamsters at one point because they kept breeding out of control and I couldn't stop it.
Too many hamsters. Yeah. That's too bad. I'm going to say it. That's too many hamsters.
I fully agree. Especially because cleaning the cages was a whole day endeavor. That was a whole Saturday, every Saturday. God. They were all interconnected. They managed to get into their own tribes. They got into tribal warfare. There was raids and murders. I was basically running furry Game of Thrones when I was a kid. It was nightmarish.
That's bad news.
There's a hell of a graphic novel in there somewhere.
Well, yeah, and obviously the cats are the dragons.
Yeah,
these giant prowling monsters outside of civilization that occasionally kills off a main character. Yeah. Yep.
The smell in that room.
Oh no, it's bad, and especially because even after that period ended, we weren't done with it. Because for like 5 years, we were finding hamster poop in the closets and stuff. There was a population of rogue hamsters in the walls.
Oh, I'm certain of it.
Okay, we have spun really far off, though.
Yeah.
So I feel like I need to lasso us back on topic.
Sure.
So that's how I got in the paranormal.
Yeah.
Hamster. 74 hamsters. That was a gateway.
Yep.
74 hamsters in the paranormal.
It's a gateway drug to the paranormal.
I think we may have found our episode title, 74 hamsters.
It's pretty good.
Too many hamsters, man. I'm going to say it. It's too many.
I'm going to be haunted by that for the rest of my life.
Because you keep bringing it up.
To be fair, there's very few memories of my childhood that have endured as vividly as the looming helplessness I felt staring at the wall of cages and knowing I am no longer in control of this situation.
And Vietnam War style flashbacks.
Yeah.
I mean, legitimately, sometimes.
Think you have 74 hamsters waiting for you in heaven.
Because there were several times I got woken up in the night by the screams of hamster war.
Yeah.
And then it would be like 2 a.m. on a school night, and I'm trying to figure out where to put the bodies.
Oh my God. No. It's too many hamsters, man.
Yeah, no, it was.
It's no wonder that your brain is the way that it is.
The worst was the baby raids. That legitimately traumatized me.
I want to move on.
All right.
Let's not discuss baby raids in front of people.
Okay, I'm ready.
Ready for part two?
Yes,
God, I hope so.
Yeah, I was ready for part two 15 minutes ago.
For anything. I'm haunted by these 74 hamsters.
Otherwise, this is about to become a very specific hamster-themed therapy session for me.
All right, then. I do not want that in any way, shape, or form. So,
moving right along.
Part two, fighting the forgotten. The old adage goes that we die twice. Once when we physically die, and once when our name is uttered for the last time. It is also said that it takes about 3 generations to be forgotten forever. So Adam likes to visit cemeteries to speak those names and, in a sense, resurrect the dead. Adam doesn't think that ghosts are hanging around the graves or anything, but that when we speak to them, we can conjure them up and make contact. He likes to try and communicate with them about their wants, their needs, and their life. He's even captured some evidence that way. Once, in a Provincetown cemetery crypt where he liked to sit and think, he and some friends took a recorder into the cemetery. They knocked on the door to one of the crypts asking if anyone was there. When they played the tape back, they heard a gentle but clear, "Help me," on the tape. At this time, he was far more excited about getting a reply so clear than he was about the opportunity to actually help a ghost. And it wasn't until an investigation in the fall of 2011, back at Waverly Hills, that he would start to change his approach. The owners had recently opened up the nurse's wing, a wholly new area that no one had investigated, and Adam and Amy were the first to get to. They asked the usual questions and got soft taps and knocks in response. The taps, though, seemed to occur on cue, giving them the hope of finding something. Adam then placed his hand on a window frame and asked it to knock right beside his hand. And sure enough, it happened. Strong enough that he could actually feel the vibration, which is wild. So, they started asking more pointed questions with the knock once for yes, twice for no routine. After confirming if the spirits were nurses, he asked how many of them were there and proceeded to count 13 to 14 knocks. This was a life-changing experience for them, and they didn't want to leave without giving something back. The spirits gave them sound bites, great shots, and to some actual evidence. And what do they have? Adam, while on a high from the investigation being so successful, was despaired that they couldn't do more for the spirits. They had to leave because of the filming schedule. So Adam and Amy prayed for the nurses, which the nurses said that they wanted via the knocks. And as they were leaving, the knocks followed them out the whole way as if begging them not to leave. But they left, and after this experience, their investigations gradually became less and less self-serving. Instead, they started focusing less on gathering evidence and more on the needs of the spirits themselves. Over the next 2 years, they tried to incorporate more human-centered investigation techniques while preparing to break away from the main show. In 2012, Amy had her daughter, and things changed. Adam had gotten married and started a nonprofit theater company in Provincetown. They tried to balance it all, but with 8 months on the road, it was not possible. So in 2014, they decided to not re-sign their contracts and began drafting up their own show, Kindred Spirits. The goal being to not only investigate the haunting, but to try and uncover the human story beneath it, to try and provide whatever the spirit needs. At the core of it all, they wanted to know, why do the dead linger, and what can we learn from it? And with that, we're going to quickly go into discussion question number 2.
That was quick. Wow.
Yeah. So, Ghost Hunters first aired in 2004. We humans are supposed to be pretty smart, right? Being the top of the food chain and all?
That is what they say.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Why did it take until 2016, when Kindred aired, to get our first mainstream TV show that really did focus on not just gathering evidence and jump scares?
I think because people like sensationalism.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's exciting to have results. It's exciting to be scared. It's exciting to, you know, hear a ghost say something aggressive or to ask a ghost, how did you die? Or whatever. It's exciting and we're drawn to that without thinking of ghosts as people, but instead thinking of them as entertainment.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think I think also beyond that, it's there's a couple factors that also kind of add to that. The whole idea of they're trying to produce television. And that is fundamentally at odds with the realities of most paranormal investigations. I don't know how much investigating you two have done. But it is intensely boring. It is
nothing, a lot of sitting around.
Yep. Yeah. Nothing happens for long stretches of time. Ooh. And when you get something, it's very exciting. But like, for example, we did the last investigation we did, you know, we had a couple interesting hits on the Estes method, but it was basically sitting around all night for the motion sensor ball to light up once in a very strange way.
That was probably the most exciting thing that happened.
Yeah. And that obviously runs contrary to what you want to do with television. It's a very similar critique I have of the Skinwalker Ranch show, which I think is fine if you look past the History Channel production of it. You know, the voiceover and all of that, but you kind of get the sense that really they're picking the experiments that look best on television to do for the show.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely they are, but they're doing it from the perspective of jump scares and you know, these voice things. When I think, and maybe I'm just optimistic about it, but I think if we can make a documentary about something that would be innately boring, like many documentaries are, and we can make them interesting, then I think we can do the same thing with paranormal TV.
I don't disagree. I think the other big hurdle you have to get past is for many people, because again, we have this story of Adam and Amy deciding to try to humanize these spirits, right? That is as far as most of the world is concerned regarding ghosts, at least in the Western world, US specifically. That is already kind of a position to take once you've already gone through several positions in terms of your thoughts and attitudes about the dead. But I don't think most people start there. A lot of people want ghosts, if they're real, to be just horror movie spooky ghosts. Because it's easier to deal with that than the reality that when you die, you might get stuck like these people. I think a lot of people don't think about the full implications of ghosts and what that could mean, because it is a very personal topic for all of us innately, because we're all going to die one day and we could end up like that. I think a lot of people, like a lot of negative possibilities in life, they just don't like thinking about it. And so television producers don't want to put that on the screen.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think people are inherently afraid of death. And like you said, if you have to think, well, that ghost is a person that lived, it gives yourself a real sense of morality, and people don't want to face that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we as a species are so disturbingly good at bottling up our own mortal dread and you know, basically imagining that we'll just go on forever. You know, there's that saying, kids all think they're immortal. I got to say, my life experience has shown me that it's not just kids. It takes specific acts of will or specific life experiences to teach you proper respect for your mortality. I think a lot of people, and I this is kind of the crass way to say it, a lot of people are walking around like they've never been beaten up. And, you know, and I know that's and that is an experience that, well, obviously I don't want people to get beaten up, and I'm using beaten up kind of as a metaphor for those sort of life experiences. I don't want people to get beaten up. At the same time, I have to say, as someone who got his ass thoroughly kicked on a number of occasions, it really taught me a lot and brought me to a more mature understanding, at least I believe, of my immortality, of my place in the world, of kind of, I don't know, the existential dimension of our existence that I don't think I would have arrived at if I had stayed the same 18-year-old kid that I was at the end of high school before the car accident and all the other traumas that started happening. You know, I would have just continued to not really think about it, and ghosts would have remained a spooky horror story thing.
Yeah, there's a quote from my favorite movie of all time that I like that really, I think, that says in a similar vein to what, like what you were saying there. It's once you've taken a few punches and realize that you're not made of glass, you don't feel alive unless you're pushing yourself as far as you can go. And that's how a lot of people like look at it. Like once you realize, like they, it's almost like in some ways though, I feel like that's almost the opposite of how you want to approach it, because you're taking the idea of, I've realized I can take a punch, and so therefore I'm going to push myself harder. And a lot of people do that. Now, that being said, I wonder, and I'm just thinking aloud, I guess, I wonder, like, because there are cultures all over the world that do not see or think about ghosts the same way that we do.
Correct.
They would never in a million years dream of doing a show like Ghost Hunters or Kindred Spirits or anything like that, because they would see it as very disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, we as a culture thought about that, thought in a similar vein. So I wonder when that really fell off, when we stopped really thinking about ghosts as being real, because ultimately that's what it is, I think. The producers, the people who greenlight these shows, they don't think it's real. They don't care. They just want a TV show, and they know that these are a dime a dozen, and they can make a quick buck off of it on the Discovery Channel, and that they're cheap. And the people who are going to do that, they're going to host, the people like Adam and Amy, are going to do it for a quarter of as much as other reality TV shows.
Yeah.
And they'll do a lot of the legwork, you know?
Well, and I do wonder, like, because we can, if we want to trace back when do people stop thinking ghosts are real, that goes into the Enlightenment and the Renaissance and everything that happened post that. But I do also wonder if part of it also comes down to, you know, the age-old problem of everything must become a commodity in a late-stage capitalist environment. And now, basically, what we were starting to see there is even death must be economized. You know, we must find a way to profit even off the idea of lingering human souls.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the cost of funerals these days is outrageous, so it's got to trickle down somewhere, right?
Yeah, just chuck my body in the river. Let the turtles get rid of it. Jesus.
That would contaminate the water table.
Okay,
we'll
fine.
We'll get 74 hamsters, okay? Yeah. And we'll eat your body.
Yeah. Feed me back to my children. The cycle must be completed.
Yeah. You'll come full circle.
But I was going to say, yeah, that I think part of that just has to do with the nature of reality television, particularly early reality television. Of early reality television is some of the scummiest stuff you will ever see in your entire life. Like, the only reason they didn't straight up murder people on camera is that they checked with legal, and legal was like, I don't think we can swing that, even if they signed the waiver. Like,
no death race, not yet.
Yep. Like, so I think it was literally just the culture and tone of reality television for many years was just inherently, to put it bluntly, trashy. Like, you couldn't put any sort of reality show on the air that wasn't just exploitative garbage, because the producers behind it were like, that's what reality television is. Like, if it's an unscripted show, it kind of has to be about people being awful to each other or putting themselves in humiliating / dangerous situations, because nobody's going to watch it otherwise, because it was, again, in 2004, that it was a new thing. It was not this, it was not like, you know, a quarter of all programming like it is now. So yeah, they were literally just going for what is going to be cheap and loud enough that it is going to attract enough attention for us to make back our investment, and no other details beyond that actually mattered for quite a long time.
Right.
I agree.
It was like the reaction and the drama is what they wanted. Yeah. So
Can you imagine though, if we got to the stage where, okay, somehow scientifically they proved ghosts are real, they prove the afterlife, they prove all that. How long until we get to like Big Brother 22, the meat grinder, where you get eliminated twice? Once you get eliminated, then they throw you in the meat grinder. Then, if your soul is eliminated, they send you to hell.
Well, if capitalism continues going the way that it's going, I think probably about 5 years.
Yeah. Can I start applying now?
your wife is not going to let you go.
I know.
Grinder.
I know. That's why I married her. She's going to make sure I live till I'm 80. And not a moment longer. That's when the gun comes out.
She has two rules. No more than two hamsters. And also, no murder reality shows.
Here's the funny thing. She's the one who watches the murder reality shows because Jay got her into true crime. That's not on me. And there won't be hamsters. I've accepted that I simply can't control that particular storm, and I will never allow it in my house again.
I just don't understand.
I think that's one of the funniest stories.
Because they just kept breeding. And
instead of, I don't know, like sending them away, you just kept them around.
You don't understand. A Siberian dwarf hamster specifically, it's almost impossible to tell male from female until they're fucking.
Yep.
Their penises go back up into a little pouch and then come out when they're ready to do their business. So I couldn't tell. I kept trying to split them. I took them to pet stores to tell me which one's the male, which one's the female. They couldn't.
Separate all of them, dude. Why don't you just take all of them and assume
74 cages?
Because I wanted my hamsters. I was determined.
Less. Also, sorry I keep bringing this up. It's going to live rent-free in my head for the rest of my life.
Yeah,
my tombstone is going to say she died doing what she loved, thinking about the 74 hamsters.
I'm glad that that horrifying blood-soaked moment of my history is going to have a net positive impact on the world.
Nick, you do understand that 25 years from now, we're going to be sitting on a panel at a convention, and some like 16-year-old kid at their first ever convention is going to get the mic for a question and be like, "Oh, I have a question about the 74 hamsters." And
you're just gonna be, "God damn it!"
Really, what it is, it's going to be a question. What were the baby raids? And then I'm just going to go into a PTSD-induced flashback of violence and screaming.
So are we going to use baby raids as our transition twice?
Baby raids.
Yes.
Let's go.
All right. Yes.
So are we ready for part three?
Part three.
Now that we've said baby raids again, it's time for part three.
Part three. We see death through the eyes of religion. It's hard to have a career that is all about death and not have to think about something like religion. As the idea for an afterlife for the vast majority of us is centered around your own personal, religious, or spiritual beliefs. For a gay man that grew up in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, that is a lot to deal with. Growing up, church was a big part of Adam's life, but as you can imagine, as his understanding of his queerness grew, so did his distance from the church. Growing even more exponentially when they began preaching that AIDS was God's punishment for the LGBTQ community. And as a side note, I had a very, very similar experience. The last church service I went to was the Sunday after gay marriage was legalized, and the pastor spent the whole morning worship service praying for it to be overturned. Needless to say, I walked out before the sermon, and I've never returned. By the time high school came around, Adam had completely broken away from the church, but he did still believe in God. Quote, "Nowadays I have complicated feelings about what heaven and hell are, not just whether they really exist, but whether they are different for people depending on their belief. But also, I think my connection to a higher power is deeper now, because now I am doing it on my own terms. I make no excuses for who I am as a person, and God continues to truly bless my life with so many wonderful things." End quote. To Adam, the paranormal itself is a sort of belief system, and it often leads to the development of personal ideas about what the afterlife may be like. Adam believes that he has communicated with ghosts, and through that has come to believe that it is possible for them to teach us what the afterlife is actually like. He also believes some ghosts may stick around because of a belief in hell, because they believe that they will be going there. Unfortunately, turns out that ghosts are pretty hesitant to talk about this great mysterious beyond. In his experience, asking the ghosts about the afterlife typically happens when they are asking about the ghosts' religious beliefs, or in some cases, the lack of those beliefs. In one case, the ghost of a resident's husband, who was an atheist, said over EVP that he believed in heaven. Naturally, he wouldn't elaborate, as it's hard to get detailed responses when communicating via recorder and across realms. The point being that someone who was an atheist in life died and now said that he believed in heaven. Why? We may never know, but to Adam, it is very curious. Other ghosts, like the nurses at Waverly Hills, just want prayer. And as much as they can, Adam and Amy are happy to oblige. There are many instances of people having some sort of communication with their loved ones after they have died. But after-death communications like this are temporary. Adam suspects that many, if not the majority of spirits, are in the afterlife and only visit us here on occasion. They have even seen that on investigations, where a familial spirit just pops in for a short time, even when they had nothing to do with the haunting that brought Adam to the location. So in a way, they were just getting in the way. Good for them. He also believes that the living can ask the dead to visit, and sometimes do. This is not something new. The act of conjuring the dead is ancient and goes back thousands of years to our earliest shamans and sorcerers. It is itself something that typically goes hand in hand with some people's religion, because, as it turns out, when you study the paranormal, there's going to be crossover with religion. Another name that is not unfamiliar on this show is that of Greg Newkirk. He grew up Baptist, which was at odds with his paranormal interests as he grew up. All paranormal phenomenon, in his parents' eyes, was the work of the devil. When he tried to explain to them that he could do the investigations from a religious perspective, they, like a good Baptist, freaked out more. The fact is, many paranormal investigators allow their own notions of the afterlife to color how they view and interact with the phenomenon. And while we can try to avoid this, paranormal phenomena are meant to be encountered subjectively. Adam believes personal spirituality has more to do with communication with spirits than organized religion does. Quote, finding answers and reconciling fears about our own mortality can only be achieved by exploring that inner layer of our core beliefs, asking questions, and trying to process those answers. Paranormal investigation takes that one step further by exploring the idea of communication with those who have passed on and having faith that it can be achieved. End quote. Religion is a specific structure, an outward expression of belief. Spiritual beliefs are something more fluid, more subjective to the individual. Dana Newkirk says that spirituality is an intuitive process, that it relies not on logic, but on innate faculties within us all. It does not have borders, rules, or restrictions. So then, can we use religion to make a deeper connection with the spirit world? To answer this question, Adam can only really talk about what he knows best, which means that for him and most of the Western world, they have only the Christian lens to work with, which, if you spend even an iota of time in the paranormal world, you'll see is baked into the literature and lectures of those that preceded this modern wave of paranormal interest. From the Warrens to Hans Holzer, much of their research is founded on their Christian faith and beliefs. This has, unfortunately, led to many paranormal investigators, many of whom have never set foot in a church, carrying around a rock-solid belief in demons. When researching the paranormal, it's important to remember that at the root of most foundational texts, there is a bedrock of Western Christian sensibilities. One can increase the tools they bring to bear by simply talking with those of other faiths, learning what they think of the afterlife, and then using that to form a more dynamic personal picture of what might be going on. Most major world religions acknowledge the paranormal in one way or the other. Hinduism observes year-long mourning rituals to stop the departed from becoming hungry ghosts, who are excluded from the cycle of reincarnation. Buddhists and Taoists observe Ghost Month, a 2,000-year-old ritual meant to honor ancestors and ward off wandering spirits. Islam has belief in jinn, unseen inhuman spirits that exist alongside us. These jinn are even known to cause activity in line with a haunting. To them, these events are a commonplace, consequence of sharing the world with the unseen jinn. The point being that the paranormal isn't demonic. It's also not anti-God, though many through the years have demonized Adams and other paranormal investigators' work as such. In fact, in Adams' own research, he has found commonalities between what is said in the Bible and many metaphysical ideas about the afterlife. For example, the Holy Ghost is God in spirit form. The Bible contains angels, demons, visitations by the dead, crisis apparitions, and other supernatural manifestations. There are psychics, prophetic visions, and holy miracles. The Bible, the holy book of so many haters, is chock full of weird shit. Adam reached out to Christian researcher Matt Arnold, who has a master's in pioneering ministries from Manchester University, to gain more insight into the paranormal occurrences reported in the Bible. Matt's thesis was on paranormal hauntings and deliverance applications. Much of his work surrounds getting at the meaning of the actual words used. For example, old scripture calls the afterlife Hades because that word meant unseen. In modern times, people take it to mean hell. Ghosts are in the Bible, but named differently. In 1 Samuel 28, there is an Ab, which is understood to be an ancestral spirit. And this one scripture alone seems to prove that paranormal phenomenon has been taken seriously for thousands of years. Religious skeptics often point to Hebrews 9:27 as proof that ghosts don't exist, but even this is a mistranslation according to Matt. The passage, read to indicate that one is instantly judged upon death and hence cannot linger, actually compares the time lapse between death and judgment to the time lapse between the two comings of Christ. It could also explain why some spirits come and go. Maybe they are working in the afterlife and come back to try and do good or take a step on their spiritual journey. Jesus even had two opportunities to refute ghosts and didn't. In Matthew 14:22 through 23, he walks on water, and his disciples initially believe that he is a ghost. And in Luke 24:36 through 43, he appears to the disciples and says that he is not a ghost. And in neither passage did he scold his followers for thinking that he was some fake spooky specter. No, instead, he just assured them that he wasn't one. The confusion here is rooted in basic fear of the unknown. But the truth is that ghosts are people, and most are just looking to communicate.
Can you imagine if, like, we developed technology to open a window to the past, look back, and we look back on that moment, and when Jesus is standing before him saying, "I am not a ghost," he's just covered in a bed sheet with two eye holes cut in it.
And while sometimes the spirit's beliefs align with the investigators, this isn't always the case. And when asked to pray for one from a different belief system, Adam uses a secular prayer to God, love, light, without any strong preference to one religion or another. He believes that spirits care more about our intentions and our vibe more than the words that we use. All of this being said, there are times when it may not be appropriate for Adam or another to investigate something. Some situations may call for experts in other religions to be brought in. Instead of pulling out the prayer book of a faith that he doesn't understand, Adam does bring in those experts. When they encountered a Native American warrior spirit in season 4 of Kindred, they called in a shaman, Miguel Saig Jr., who used their cultural connection and took what was a very angry spirit and got it to quiet almost immediately. Sometimes you have to know when you may also be part of the problem so that you can be part of the solution. And with that, we're going to move into our final discussion question of part one.
Whoop, whoop.
So, in a lot of ways, we see the dead through the eyes of our religion and our spirituality. So, how much do you think that impacts our experience in the afterlife? Or are we ultimately going to experience the same thing regardless of our religious views? Let that sink in.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think because it's just like nobody knows what does happen. But I do like how he brought up that one instance in the book with that the man who was like a complete atheist, like did not believe in heaven. Mm-hmm. And they were talking to him and now he does as a ghost. So there has to be something like, you know, depending on what you believe, it seems that we all kind of do go to heaven or some form of heaven. Because, I mean, this man didn't believe in it when he was alive, but right. now being having passed, his complete like it changed. So I think that maybe religion kind of like shapes that in a way, but I think we probably all go to the same place, I would think.
I don't, all I know for sure is that all dogs go to heaven.
Yeah. True. 100%.
Yes. I mean, this is something we talked about on a recent episode, one of the episodes that we did on the Serpents of the Sky, Dragons of the Earth. We talked about the idea that what if the various afterlife realms, because human thought's been attributed to them, they exist sort of as subdivisions within a collective whole. So, like, if you believe in the Christian heaven, you go to the Christian heaven, and Nirvana's next door to that, and next door to that is Valhalla. Yeah. Because they are basically all subdivisions we've created within infinity.
Right. Yeah.
And if I wanted to try to come up with an alternate answer to that, because I kind of do like that. I like that idea of the endless journey, that we're really, this is one stop of many, and we'll go through all those afterlife realms, and we'll go, and then there's something beyond that we can't even conceive. I like that because I don't like stopping. The idea of eternity seems incredibly boring to me. But that said, I mean, what if it's even less like defined like suburbs? So I'm thinking about the fact that, all right, so let's say I grew up in a culture where the color red meant that you were a vile criminal. You were a mass murderer of babies. You go on baby raids, right? So if I grow up in that culture, right, and I come to a new culture, I see a guy in a red shirt, and I shoot him dead. Obviously, in the culture I'm in, I'm a criminal. But in my perception of the world, I just stopped a baby raid. And that's a kind of a small scale example of where I'm trying to go with this, in that our perceptions and those beliefs that we come baked in with often do very literally shape our reality. Because it, even though that person may have just been going to get a sandwich, in my mind at that moment, he was going on a baby raid. Right. So I felt fully justified in my own internal subjective viewpoint in shooting him dead in the street. Well, what if that carries over into the afterlife to a degree, in that we all go to the same place, but we're not perceiving the same place? So let's say it is one afterlife realm, but if I believe in the Christian heaven, I will see it as the Christian heaven. Anything that contradicts with that, much like contradictions to our existing worldview in this world, we ignore, we'll push past, we simply won't see. It will be cut out of our perceptual paradigm. And so what if it is going to one big cosmic soup, and the process of dying and living and going through whatever we go through in this life before it and after is about learning how to kind of take those blinders off, slowly widening the aperture to a more accurate view of the universe.
I like that.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That actually goes in line with something that I was thinking. It's very in a very similar vein. Because I was thinking, like, we all go to the same place. I believe very strongly in the idea of we are all connected. We're all one. And that when we die, we are essentially going to rejoin the greater consciousness, whatever that might be. Like, I believe very strongly in that idea. That being said, I also believe, like you were saying, that my perception of my experience as the, you know, as one with the greater consciousness, to the universe, that's what I'll say, might be different than yours. So in my afterlife, it might be me in Ireland with my family and Buffy and all of my pets and everybody, you know, all my loved ones, alive or dead. They're all there with me. But at the same time, in your afterlife, I might be there.
Yeah.
Neither one is false.
Well, and
I could be me as Rory is in my own afterlife, but me as Rory is in yours too, if I'm a part of that.
Well, I mean, and I think that's something that we've talked about before as well with specifically T.C. Lethbridge, his idea of the different streams of time that were existing in concurrently, in that what if we are innately fractal beings, in that there is much more to us than the version who's sitting in these rooms recording this show, in that right now there's another piece of us that's up in heaven watching us. And there's another piece of us that hasn't been born yet that's watching us. And it's all part of some sort of amalgam entity that, again, we go back. This was a very old example from that we talked about on the show. But we were talking about the whole idea of what if we are one consciousness that's been kind of broken up. And the whole idea is to mend it. You know, think about you take a hammer and you hit a window. The point of impact is where you're going to see the most shards, and then it will splinter outwards. What if we're on the outward edge and the goal is to sort of heal your way inward, to connect pieces, recognize yourself in them, become part of them until you can kind of mend the whole window, until you become aware that you are part of a single pane of glass? Yeah, so that maybe that's possible too. I mean, granted, all of this, we could also just become toads.
Adorable. That would be adorable.
Hashtag toad afterlife.
Hashtag toad afterlife. Toad so the animal or Toad the dog?
No, Toad the little mushroom-headed guy from Mario.
Oh.
Very clearly. That's what the toads are. It's all the babies who died in the raids.
No, I don't want to. The nightmares are going to be unstoppable. I don't even know what it means. So I think I come at this from a different perspective, in that I was raised in a completely, like, non-religious household. My mother does not believe any of it exists. My dad was Catholic, but like doesn't really subscribe to any of it. And I was pretty much raised to be like, well, God's not real. Like nothing happens. Like we're all just here for a minute, enjoy it while we're here. So I have like zero religious background. Everything I know about religion, I have learned from movies or asking Nicole questions.
Yeah, I grew up in a Catholic household. So yeah.
Yeah. So I have always subscribed to the thought that the afterlife is this, just on a different plane. So like you die here and then you are immediately born somewhere else. And it is exactly this. And sometimes it overlaps. And that's why like we can see ghosts. And I think that we look like ghosts to the ghosts that we're perceiving. Mm. And I think it's just all layers and layers and layers of consciousness stacked on top of each other or whatever. And that's where we go when we die. I also think that you can go there when you're sleeping. I also think that you can haunt something while you're still alive.
It reminds me almost of the image again in my head. There is like a spring. It's a constant upward circle. Mm-hmm. We're on this tine of the spring. There's another life below it and above it that's still connected.
It's almost, and it's like that combined with the stacked universe theory, where all of time is happening simultaneously to each other, all right now. So something that's happening thousands of years ago is still happening. It's happening right now.
Yeah,
it's like a combination of that. I like it.
Now I'm curious. So there's this idea that we've come across called eternal recurrence. And so I just want to pick apart. You said you die, then you're reborn. In your conception, do you imagine that we're just redoing the same life over and over again as under the eternal recurrence theory, or are we being reborn to different experiences?
I'd like to think you get to choose, actually. So like maybe like you die and like while you're, I don't know, they say like the light tunnel or whatever, like while you're like getting on the train to go to the next life, like you get like a little pamphlet and it's like recently deceased. Where do you want to go? And you can choose. Maybe this time I'm going to be a gnome. Maybe I'm going to be a toad. I'm
like choose your own adventure.
Kind of. Maybe I just want to like
choose
be
your
like
own
a
challenge.
Little,
I like that
yeah,
one
like
a lot. Yeah.
Particle of dust that like, you know, floats through the ether and eventually like goes through a black hole and then is born into a planet. And you're like that for however long. I'd like to think that you get to choose whatever you want because energy is never ending. So,
here's the thing. You might ask, well, if you get to choose, then who is choosing all the horrible modes of existence? But eternity is a long, long time. You get me bored enough, I'll be a tapeworm.
I think it sounds fun. I want to be a ring light one time. You know what I mean? Like anything and everything. Like, let's do that. Let's live all of it.
At least once I'm going to be a rhino, but we all know it's going to be more than once.
I want to be a cheetah so badly. I just want to go fast.
Maybe you have been a cheetah, and that's why you want to return to it.
I think I have been, because both of these guys have observed it many times. I'll be doing something totally normal, and then I'll just suddenly sprint from one end of the house to the other. Because,
gotta go fast.
I just suddenly get taken by the urge of, I gotta go fast.
The Sonic spirit flows through you.
Yeah.
Oh, Jay's in the running hour. Okay.
It's like a puppy witching hour, but it's like 10 seconds long.
I get the zoomies. I 100% get the zoomies. And Rory decided to, that's like, yeah, I can put up with that for the rest of my life.
Seems fun.
Aww, worst comes worst, you just throw down some of those tire strips.
And I have for many years been personally drawn to the idea of your religious beliefs shaping your afterlife, but I always considered it as kind of more like, because you know, in a lot of the like ancient Near Eastern, in like a lot of the ancient Mediterranean and Near Eastern cultures, with a pantheon of gods, choosing one to be devoted to was not necessarily an insult or a statement of disbelief in all of the other ones. It was just, this is the deity that I am most drawn to, that most enriches my life or most suits my human needs. And that's how I view all religions now, is this is the theoretical lens through which I analyze my own spiritual existence, not necessarily a statement of one being inherently superior to all of the others. So I've always liked the idea of, that is what influences your afterlife, is what deity or religious framework that you took the most comfort and strength in while you were a human being. And yeah, I like Nick, I can absolutely see that it's like, yeah, if we reincarnate over and over again, most of us probably do cycle through different afterlives, because in Buddhist frameworks, and I believe also in Hindu frameworks, but I will admit I'm shakier on a lot of the Hindu afterlife than I am on the Buddhist afterlife, because it's inherently more complicated. The quote unquote afterlife is a misnomer in those religions, because you're there temporarily. It's a stage of your Atman's actual evolution, or your Anatman's actual evolution. And I can see that in my own life, of the idea of, yeah, and there's, at some point, there's going to be a time where I die, and I'm going to be spending a long chunk of my afterlife with Persephone. And then after a while, I'm going to get sent back to Earth. I'll spend some time on Earth as whatever religion. And then when I pass away from that physical incarnation on Earth, whatever, if I chose to worship a god in that life, I will spend some time afterwards resting and learning and healing with that deity. Then I'll get sent back to Earth, and just kind of, again, like in Hinduism and Buddhism, you're just going to do that over and over and over again until whatever needs to click finally clicks and you exit the cycle of samsara permanently. Like, that's, because that's what nirvana actually is supposed to be, is I have exited the cycle of samsara, and I have fully ceased to exist. The shell has dissolved around my Anatman. I have once again returned to being truly nothing.
Oh, it sounds so peaceful. Honestly, I could go for a little nothing for a while.
Right.
Just for like a hot minute. Yeah. Yeah. Can I get, like
reject
a vacation?
Reject existence, embrace void.
Just a little, dab and nothing to take the edge off.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I could go for that.
I feel like void would become the most addictive drug in the history of the world.
Yeah.
Take to stop.
Yeah, it's called heroin.
Oh, right.
Oh, right.
Hello. Right, yeah, that's right. I forgot about heroin.
Yeah, it exists. It's a real thing.
I just thought that was in the pictures.
Oh, yeah. I too saw Requiem for a Dream, and it too ruined me.
That and Trainspotting.
Yeah.
And, you know, life.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So anything else we want to add to that question? I think we beat it pretty thoroughly.
Yeah, I think so.
Baby raid. Baby raids, let's move on.
So, all right.
All right, the baby raid continues.
No. So that's it for part one. So we're going to move into what we call housekeeping.
Yeah, cuz the about the author will be next week.
Yes. Housekeeping. So if you liked what you heard, you can like and subscribe or whatever podcasting platform it is that you are listening to us on. And if it is Apple or Spotify, leave us a review. 5 stars preferred, not required. And if you want to shoot us an email, you can do that at noctivagantpodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on social media at noctivagantpod on Twitter. And I'm at Mix Rory Wicks.
I'm at Bearish Terror.
I'm at Midwest Undead.
Then we have a plethora of other social media platforms, an Instagram, Noctivagant_podcast.
A Reddit account, Noctivagant Podcast.
A Tumblr account, Noctivagant Podcast.
And as mentioned at the front of the episode, and as you've heard throughout the whole thing, we are joined by a quite unusual podcast who probably has social medias himself.
No, we're actually not online. You can do send us a smoke signal.
Oh,
that's how
they'll deliver the podcast episodes on vinyl, and then you get to play. Yes, you get to listen to it like that.
Listen, that's dope as fuck, and you. I'm in.
We'll come over and scream it at you in your home.
I do love the idea though of drive-by podcasting. You just drive-by screaming at people,
screaming fast.
Megaphone.
We do jogging to keep up.
We are on social media. Unfortunately, we're there. We're on the social meds. A quite unusual pod on basically everything.
Yeah,
and we're also, you can email us quiteunusualpod@gmail.com.
And I will, of course, I'll put the links to all of your socials and everything in the episode description. But I think
that's it. So we'll see you guys next week.
You're gonna ask me to lead us out of here?
Oh yeah, lead us out of here, Rory. Oh,
okay. Thanks. Yeah. So good night, ghosties. Good night, ghoulies. Good night, moth people. Stay safe out there on those midnight roads.
Don't get lost.
And leave the babies alone, for God's sake.
Please.
Lord have mercy.
Don't even mention the babies.
Baby raid.
See?
It's infected.
74 hamsters.
That and 72 hamsters. It's all I can think about.
74.
74 hamsters. Whatever the fuck.
74 tiny demons.
It's 74 hamsters, you asshole.
I'm sorry. If they were all demons, it wouldn't be tragic. But there were so many sweethearts in there, and they didn't last long in the wars.
I'm not trying to victim blame, but you did. You were their god, and you made this happen.
I know. Trust me, I have paid my money to therapy over this already.
Have you?